Before we get into mindfulness, the mindful revolution and MBSR and stuff like that, I want to just take a few moments to acknowledge the passing of one of my heroes, and probably many people's here. As probably most of you know, Pete Seeger passed away this week. I don't usually acknowledge people's passing particularly because it happens all the time, but it's actually, it's hard for me to say his name without tearing up. He was the real deal. When my son was young, I was just remembering this a couple of days ago when I heard it, that he passed away. Adam used to say, well, who are your favorite people in the world? Who's the most important people in the world? And I said, I don't know about important, but there's two people that I would feel a real loss if they're not on this planet, the Dalai Lama and Pete Seeger. He was goodness and courage and stood for truth no matter what, but it was all about love. And so I just want to say that and thank him, and know that it's wonderful that there's such beautiful human beings in the world, and that they can bring that goodness out of others. So thank you, Pete Seeger. There's a memorial in Berkeley on Monday. Oh, honoring him. Uh-huh. Oh, nice. At Freight and Salvage on Monday, free, honoring Pete Seeger, Holly Neer, and others. What's that? At 8 o'clock. Yeah. Thank you. Freight and Salvage on Addison between Milvia and Shattuck. Thank you. Yeah, he is special. Yeah. So I asked Jane to come here and share with us, after practicing for 35 years or so in the last few years, she decided to check out what this mindfulness-based stress reduction stuff is all about. As usual, she really goes for it when she does and goes all the way. Wanted to invite her to share with us, and we can explore MBSR in the context of our Dharma community together. So take it away. Jane, by the way, teaches Awakening Joy groups and Kalyanamitta groups.
Okay. Well, so I thought tonight what I'd do is talk to you about mindfulness and about a little bit about MBSR, talk about some of the benefits of mindfulness, talk about what goes on in MBSR class, and then give you an experience of an MBSR meditation, the body scan. So John Kabat-Zinn defines mindfulness as paying attention on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally to the unfolding of experience moment to moment. Now, I actually like the definition by the NBA basketball coach Phil Jackson, who coached the Chicago Bulls, including Michael Jordan. He said mindfulness is, he says, the trick is to experience each moment with a clear mind and an open heart. When you do that, the game and life will take care of itself. So just a little background. Jon Kabat-Zinn has a PhD in molecular biology from MIT, and he's been a long-term meditator. When he was at a meditation in retreat in the 70s, I believe a Vipassana retreat, he figured out that meditation techniques would be very helpful to people who are in chronic pain and suffer from a lot of chronic medical conditions. So he was part of the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He was working there, and so he asked them if he could open a course on stress. And he did this in 1979, and he kept refining it and refining it so that he got it down to an 8-week course with a one-day day of meditation. And he did pre-evaluations and post-evaluations. And he actually had tremendous success with some of the people that the doctors just couldn't deal with. People who had had really bad accidents and were just in chronic pain, or people who had very debilitating medical conditions. So he's written about 7 or 8 books, and the most famous one is Full Catastrophe Living, which is a very good, it will take you page by page and through the course if you want that. Or I would suggest an even better book, by my opinion, is Bob Stahl's book, A Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction Workbook. And he gives tremendous amounts of information and exercises, as well as about 25 meditations, 45-minute meditations, 30-minute meditations, meditations on the body, on the breathing, on yoga. So it's a really complete, good book. And like, if you have, most of you already know how to meditate, but if you have friends that don't and you want to give them something, I would really suggest that. It has, well, it has an MP3 program that converts to CDs. So since 1979, MBSR has spread completely throughout the world. There's over 12,000 health professionals that have been trained to teach it. It's being taught at over 740 sites. Now 80 corporations use it. The Army uses MBSR. When I was in the training with Jon Kabat-Zinn, there were 2 FBI agents in it, and they weren't undercover. They were just doing it because they knew it improved their organization. Mindful Schools, which Kate taught thousands of kids and teachers, is written up in the Time magazine article, and I believe they've taught now, 18,000 students in 53 schools or something. But a big reason why MBSR is so accepted and people are using it so much is there's so much study that's been done. Last year there were over 470 studies done on it. And these are really scientifically rigorous studies, pre and post studies. A lot of them use functional MRIs. They're going in measuring different events in the brain before and after, just taking 8 weeks of study. So I thought I'd go over with you. I Googled today the benefits of MBSR, and I wonder if anybody could guess how many entries came up. Any guesses? Anybody? What? 800? Less than 8 million. Actually, there were 64,200 results that came back. Okay? So that's why it's so popular. And the neat thing is they're validating what the Buddhists have known for the past 2,500 years. In fact, I'm going to read you some of the benefits, and the reason I'm going to do that is because this is done on people who have been basically meditating for 8 weeks, every day for 45 minutes, but for 8 weeks. Now, many, if not most of you here, have been meditating a lot longer than that. So when I read you these benefits, I want you to feel really good about what you're doing for your body and your brain, your emotional level, your intellect, cognitive abilities, because this is all validated. You know, this is not just, oh yeah, relax and feel good. That's why it's getting so much attention. That's why the Army is using it. That's why Kaiser Hospital is paying for it. That's why corporations use it, because it's been proven. Okay, so it's been proven. Yeah, they take people before, they take people after. They have these studies where you fill out your own. You know, when I did it, I had to fill out 4 pages of symptoms before and after. But they're doing all these functional MRI imaging on the brain, so they can actually look at the brain, the same person, before and after, just 8 weeks. So here's some of the benefits. It helps with anxiety, depression, chronic pain, post-traumatic stress disorder, high blood pressure, psoriasis, sleep problems. It's been shown to boost immune function and to help stop binge eating. When they look at the brain using functional MRIs, it demonstrates that the changes in the brain structure may underlie some of these reported improvements, that people are not just feeling better because they're spending time relaxing. There's increased gray matter density in the hippocampus, which is very important because that's known for learning and memory. It also increases areas of the brain associated with self-awareness, compassion, and introspection. And it decreases the gray matter density in the amygdala, which is known to play an important role in stress and anxiety. And in one famous study, subjects who meditated showed less activity in an area associated with negative emotions like anger, depression, anxiety, and more activity in the area associated with buoyancy, optimism, and confidence. So also they've found that in people who regularly meditate, meditation turns off certain genes and turns on other ones. Genes that are involved in controlling how the body handles free radicals, inflammation, and cell death. So also that we know that meditation training makes you better at focusing, in part by allowing you to better regulate how other things that arise impact you. And this is great news for people who suffer from attention deficit disorder, but it's also great news for all of us because, as Daniel Goleman has said in his most recent book on focus, that the ability to focus is more linked to success than a high IQ. So that's pretty impressive. We generally are just building that general trait of being able to respond instead of react. So we create more space between our experience and whatever we elect to do next. Or maybe we decide that what we want to do next is nothing at all, just to drop the rumination, drop the planning, drop the compulsion to fix things. And one of my favorite articles on the benefits that I read today was from a friend named Amy Gross. And Amy Gross used to be the editor of O Magazine. And she was responsible for getting a lot of articles in there, like articles written and about Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield. There was an article about James and Awakening Joy in it. She just did a huge amount of contribution to just the mainstream public with all these different articles she got in there. And finally she quit, and people couldn't believe that she would quit this high-paying job where she was very well-respected. And the reason she quit is because she wanted to meditate more. I've gotten to know her because I've been a veggie chopper on the 6-week retreat with her at IMS, and we just became friends, and I've...
In the silence.
Oh, yeah. No. We were in silence, but, you know, when you're 6 weeks there, you know, chopping the vegetables, you get to know each other. So, And then afterwards, there's about 4 days of integration, which is when we really got to know each other. And then I've seen her a couple times when I've been in New York since then. And what she's done is she mainly goes on meditation retreats and she teaches MBSR because she loves teaching MBSR. So I found this article today when I was looking on the benefits of MBSR, and I really liked what she wrote. She said, one of the benefits of meditation was that it reduces ruminative thinking and anxiety. You know, thinking goes round and round. She said, you bring your attention to an explosion. What is this? Ah, this time it's anger, and it feels lousy. You notice that it's causing you pain. You, not X, the object of your anger. Focusing on the sensations of the emotion, you stop telling yourself the story of how X did you wrong. And without the story, the anger runs out of fuel. Non-anger feels so good. You come to be less and less afraid of your own interior storms. So those are some of the benefits of MBSR. That's why all these corporations, even the army, the hospitals, the schools, everybody's using it, because it works and it's documented to work. So I hope that having heard all these benefits that you feel good about yourselves because you are meditating. And then I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the benefits of actually taking an MBSR course. One of the things is it basically teaches awareness and compassion, which wisdom can grow out of. And much of the benefit comes because you have a consistent practice. If somebody is going to do the course, they really need to agree to do 45 minutes a day of homework. And the homework is listening to these CDs. And so all you have to do is push the button and sit down and close your eyes and listen. And it guides you through these meditations in a very systematic way. It starts with the body scan, and then it moves into breathing meditation. And you do yoga, mindfulness of the body. You do all these different meditations. So all you have to do is be there. And that every time your mind drifts off, you just bring it back with as much kindness as possible to what's happening. So, and eventually you wean yourself off the CDs because they don't want you dependent on them. But they just want, I know when I first started to meditate, actually, I went to a 1 hour meditation class and I couldn't get it at all. And then I ended up going to a 2 week retreat in 1976, and it still was kind of hard for me to get, and I would sit there and then my mind would just go off everywhere this way and that way. It really inspired me. I loved the Dharma talks every night, and I did come back so that my friends noticed that I was very obviously much more relaxed and contained. So all my friends noticed that I had changed, but for me, I had spent a lot of time inside just kind of wandering around, not quite knowing what I was supposed to be doing. So I find these CDs, I listen to them sometimes myself even now, and I've been meditating for years, but I just find them kind of nice to listen to. It's also because you're in a like-minded community, a small group of people. My classes are generally like 8 to 10, 12 people. And so you get a lot of individual attention, you hear other people that are struggling with the same beginning issues that you are, and you're able to ask questions both in the group and in an individual interview. So then at the end of the MBSR course, people are asked to share one idea or a change of behavior they want to take away with them. So one person shared that it was so helpful to realize that she didn't have to get anywhere. She didn't have to accomplish anything with meditation. Mm-hmm. And another person shared how nourishing it was to stop multitasking when she was with her children. And another person shared she had a lot of back pain, and that back pain had really scared her And so she was always trying to avoid it and distract herself from it, and that now she was much more able to turn into the pain, and she could give her full attention to it, and so she was less held by it, less ruled by the pain, because she was able to directly face it and focus on it. And another person, a guy, commented on how much strength and support he had gotten from the group. He was going through a messy divorce and child custody battles, and it was very helpful to him to get that support from the group. And another woman reported about how her mind had been, she noticed more and more how her mind was really filled with self-criticism. And she realized she would never talk to a friend the way she was talking to herself. And she was vowing to be kinder to herself. So the class is actually filled with a lot of practices. There's 7 formal practices. There's mindful breathing, walking meditation, body scan, sitting meditation, mindful yoga, self-inquiry for stress and anxiety, loving kindness meditation, and just learning to do a mindful check-in. So those are the formal practices. And then there's 13 informal practices that you do throughout the day when you think of them. There's mindful eating. You learn how to tune into your pain. Mindful exercise, the gift of rest, mindful communication, which I really like because I've been studying with Mudita Nisker since 1983. I'm in a women's group that meets monthly, and we study communication for 4 hours. So I really like that aspect of the program. There's also looking at habits, constructive habits that you want to increase and destructive ones you want to let go of. There's noticing habitual styles of thinking like negative self-talk and catastrophizing, exaggerating the negative, mind reading, getting into the shoulds, blaming. There's doing the loving kindness practice. You get taught the RAIN practice, which is recognizing that when a strong emotion is present, allowing or acknowledging it to be there, investigating it in the body, and not identifying with it when it's there. And we go through practicing 6 qualities of mind. They really emphasize openness and empathy, compassion, loving kindness, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, and bringing 8 attitudes of mindfulness into your life, like beginner's mind, not judging, acknowledging things as they are, non-striving, equanimity, letting be, self-reliance, and self-compassion. So you can see there's a lot of content in the course. They've tweaked it over and over again to make it as impactful as they can. And what I thought I would do tonight is give you a little taste of it through leading you through the body scan. And I would have done this earlier, actually, because usually the body scan lasts about 45 minutes. That's the ideal for it. But I thought it would be kind of rudely intrusive if I did it during your meditation time. So I decided to wait till now and do a quick version of it. But you'll notice there's much more talking in this, and it's just going to be guiding you through your body to notice sensations. And it helps you to learn what your body does want and doesn't need in order to thrive. It helps you to do a deep investigation into moment-to-moment actual experience in the body. And in doing this, you may notice a wide variety of sensations from itches, aches, tingles, pain, lightness, heaviness, warmth, and cold, which all boils down to about 3 basic feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So just get comfortable. Most people, where you're comfortable and alert, most people like to close their eyes. Actually, in the centers, they have people lie down, but that's often because their body is so much in pain. We can't do this, that here, but just become comfortable and still. we start with congratulating ourselves for taking the time out of our busy lives to do this. And now do a mindful check-in, feeling into body and mind, allowing thoughts, emotions, and sensations to come up. There's no need to judge or analyze or figure things out. Just become aware of your breathing at the tip of your nose or the abdomen. All minds wander. When that happens, just acknowledge it and bring yourself back. And you may come across areas that are tense or tight. If you do, just allow them to soften. Or if you can't, let the sensations ripple in whatever direction. And as we go through the body, be mindful of any physical sensations, thoughts, or emotions that come up. I may speak of body parts you no longer have, and if so, just notice what comes up for you with kind attention. So we start with the bottom of with where the feet touch the floor. Just feel into the feet. Feel into the heel, the ball of the foot, the sole, and the toes. Feel the tops of the feet, their Achilles tendon. The ankles. Now sensing into the legs. The calves. The shins, the knees. Moving your awareness up to the quadriceps. The hamstrings. The thighs and their connections to the hips. Now moving into the pelvic region with the systems of elimination, sexuality, and reproduction. Notice any thoughts or emotions that come up with these. A of shifting awareness to the abdomen and belly, the digestion and assimilation. Now moving your awareness to your tailbone and to your lower, middle, and upper parts of the back. Bringing awareness to your chest, your heart, and lungs. Bringing your awareness down to the fingertips of your hands and into your fingers, palms of your hands, back of your hand, your wrists. Moving your awareness up your forearms, elbows, upper arms, now sensing into your shoulders and armpits. Notice your posture at this point, and without judgment, just be aware. Bringing your awareness up your neck and throat. Sensing your jaw, notice if it's clenched. Feeling your teeth, your tongue, your mouth and lips. Moving your awareness into your cheeks, your sinus passages, your eyes, sensing the muscles around your eyes. Shifting your awareness into your forehead, the top and back of the head, your brain, expanding your field of awareness to your entire body, from your head down through your neck, through your torso. Through your pelvic region. Your upper legs. Your lower legs. Your feet. Feel the entire body breathing in and breathing out. Feel your body as a whole organism. If you're in this room, there's more right with you than wrong with you. So say a silent thank you to all those parts of your body that is working. And once again, congratulate yourself for taking this time to be present. May all beings be at peace. Thank you. So I want to say that, again, Jon Kabat-Zinn didn't make this up. Obviously, it's been taught in meditation for centuries. And Ubak Khin was one of the teachers who Westerners studied with. And then any of you that have gone on Goenka retreats know that that practice is about sweeping through the body. So none of the practices, he doesn't claim to have invented anything. He just packaged them together and researched them in a way that could be helpful to people, and that people really have tremendous success with that.
So
we have a few minutes left to have a discussion about
so
this.
So you were practicing for many years, and I know how much you've been appreciating MBSR. Why do an MBSR course as opposed to, say, a beginning series, a Dharma series, which I'm going to be teaching?
Right.
And
right. So you could.
But there's
there are different
some
nights,
reason.
Actually, you could do both.
Yeah.
Well, I think that you actually are a very gifted teacher, and James says, most of you probably know, taught fifth and sixth grade for about 10 years. So he's very gifted at breaking down complex topics into make them much more accessible. But that's not true with all Dharma teachers. It can be fabulous Dharma teachers who will admit that they're not so great at teaching beginners. I also think that in your time, what you do, you spend a lot of time often in a beginning Dharma class on the Dharma, which is great to learn about. That's why I'm saying do both, because it's great to learn about the Dharma, but this is much more about the technique of mindfulness.
So we've been in the article there in Time Magazine, John says, well, this is really about strengthening your mindfulness muscle, and he says we've taken out the spirituality which they have, and so there's a pro and a con in this, the pro obviously is a lot of people aren't ready or don't want to hear about spirituality or, you know, are very...
have their own.
They have their own tradition, and it gets a little bit confusing if they think they're becoming a Buddhist or something like that. And what I've seen is that, and this is a conversation that a lot of Spirit Rock teachers have. In fact, we're getting a... we've established this entity on applied mindfulness that's different from what we teach at the on the retreats, because we also want to be having some input into mindfulness in the mainstream. And one of the concerns that people have, or my colleagues have, is that there's not real emphasis on sila, on integrity, as being a foundation for mindfulness practice, and it's not addressing liberation or freeing the mind as much as having the mindfulness techniques lead as they do to whatever benefits they do. And there's incredible, you know, obviously all these benefits. And so what would you say to that?
Well, first of all, I do think MBSR addresses freedom in the mind, not the ultimate freedom. It's just like you don't teach calculus to a first grader, but it does. When people realize that they don't have to believe their stories, that their emotions aren't necessarily telling them the big picture, that they don't have to turn away from their pain, they can turn into it. That's freedom. That's a taste of freedom. So I would just say it's more on the real basic individual level, but not, and that plenty of people start with MBSR and go on to long-term retreats. I always tell people, I was going to do a field trip with my people to come here after they did it, and they said, well, we've already been to James's course. We know how to get there. They didn't need me to bring them, you know. So it's not, I don't think they're fighting against each other.
No.
And they've done tests. Of course, with all their studies, they did tests of three groups of people. One group that took MBSR, one group that took compassion training, and one group that took nothing. And they made up this study where they had these plants in a waiting room in the doctor's office. And they were sitting on chairs, and there was one chair left. And the subject went in and sat on the chair. And then somebody came in with crutches, was wobbling and everything. And in the tests, the people that had done nothing didn't necessarily get out of their seat because the plants didn't. So they followed the crowd and stayed in their seat and just let this poor person wobble. But the people who had done MBSR and compassion did get out of their seats and gave the person a seat. Now, those are just little tests on empathy. We're not talking about huge, but I explain why. I mean, I wear my, red threads, and I explain that this is all about what the precepts are and everything, so.
Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of people that have been trained, like you said, 12,000 people or so have been trained to teach MBSR. Some of them don't have a Dharma practice and a depth in Dharma practice, but are really good at teaching the 8-week course. Some of them have had a deeper practice, and John in the last year, a few years, said, you've got to do a retreat. So now we have a whole lot of people who come to Spirit Rock or IMS or various centers around saying, okay, I'm here to go through my certification because I've been teaching mindfulness and I'm supposed to do a retreat. And then they do a retreat and they say, whoa, that's pretty interesting and profound. But it seems that it matters if the person who's teaching has had some Dharma practice. Would you say there's any difference?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are some people that just read the book. They don't even go through the training themselves. So.
And then teach it.
And call themselves an MBSR teacher because they read Full Catastrophe Living. So it's been totally unregulated, and now they're starting to rein it in. But I think in anything, it always depends on the depth of the teacher. Isn't that why you picked your teacher? I mean.
So, yeah, here, hold on a second.
MBSR stands for Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction. But it's actually a lot more than that.
Yeah, so we can just open it up for any comments, questions, and when I share that, I actually wanted to flesh out a bit.
Okay.
I want to put you on the spot. Mm-hmm. I think it's great, and I tell a lot of people to take an MBSR course. And when we were traveling in Australia and New Zealand, and we met the main MBSR teachers there, and so many people are getting into mindfulness through this. And we went to Finland. We were with the main MBSR community there. It's fabulous. It's extraordinary. How many people, anyone who's done MBSR training here? Yeah. It's great. And it's just interesting to see how it comes out of the Dharma, but wanted to make it as accessible as possible to everyone.
They used to be really almost afraid because they didn't want it connected with any kind of religion because they felt that would be complicated, to say the least. And now they're being less and less afraid.
Mm-hmm. Any question? Hold on a second.
You know, one of the things is that the fMRI stuff in the body, it comes out with the same kind of effects as a more Dharma-based meditation. And so once you have those experiences in your body, you become open to a whole lot more. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that it matters as much as you might think how you get to your inside that way, because it has that effect. And then it opened. My own experience was I dabbled in meditation on and off for 40 years, but then I took an MBSR class, and that kind of launched me into taking James's class. And of course, my MBSR teacher was a Dharma teacher, so it's hard to know where uh-huh. that line was. But but I just think that thing about the fact that it registers in your physical body in a very similar way, and once you have that, it builds on itself and opens you up even more. Mm-hmm.
And I'm remembering there's a story in the Pali Canon about this this guy who was a cousin of the Buddha, and when the Buddha came back to his hometown, everybody was so swept up by the teachings and it was so inspiring that this guy decided, okay, I'm going to become a monk also. But he was crazy about his girlfriend, and when he joined the order, he kept on obsessing about his girlfriend. And the Buddha got wind of this, or sensed what was going on, and he said, you're having a hard time. He said, I can't get her out of my mind. And then he, in the story, gave him a of a celestial nymph, just a magnificent, beautiful being, and then the Buddha says, "How does your girlfriend compare to the nymph?" I won't tell you exactly what the words are because it's just too weird. But he says, "No comparison, no comparison. Now we're talking beautiful." And the Buddha said, if you practice really hard, diligently, and get enlightened, I promise you 500 celestial nymphs. The guy practiced like his hair was on fire and got enlightened. And as soon as he got enlightened, he absolved the Buddha of his promise. He said, how silly of me. That doesn't mean anything. I let go of that one. And the story goes to show that whatever gets you to practice, whatever your motivation is, even if it's not pure or whatever, like 500 celestial nymphs, it's not bad, that mindfulness itself will free the mind. So that's to say, whatever gets you in the door, and mindfulness will have these beneficial effects. And it's also helpful to have a context of some dharma as well, particularly if the person teaching has a depth of practice. Anything else? Maybe one last question.
Oh, this maybe wasn't going to be a question, but one of my favorite teachings of Jon Kabat-Zinn is explaining that MBSR is not a secular program, actually. He says it's a program that's presented in a secular context. Secular means not related to the holy and the sacred and the religious. And he says, well, so we're not really religious, but when people close their eyes and do our practices, sometimes, you know, not our fault, sacred and holy things happen. So we are not secular. We are just teaching people how to breathe.
Good. Thanks.
So, it's something. When I first got into this stuff, it was like weird, you know. Just who? It was a bunch of hippies or would-be hippies, you know, trying to. Do something that was a bit counterculture, and here we are. As Toynbee said, the great historian Arnold Toynbee, saying that perhaps the most significant thing looking back on the 20th century is Buddhism coming to the West. He was a pretty visionary, far-sighted guy. But here it is, the mindful revolution, which is basically being more conscious in our life. And it all starts with mindfulness, and why the Buddha said mindfulness is the way to, the most direct way to overcome pain and anxiety and grief and sorrow and lamentation and realize the highest happiness. So I think it's really amazing that this movement has come and swept through so many different aspects of our society, and I really honor MBSR and those who teach it, particularly those who are steeped in practice that can teach it. And tell everyone about it.
So,
okay, so let's do a very brief metta. Just feel the blessings of like-minded friendship and the blessing that something in you has been drawn to greater consciousness, awareness, mindfulness, heartfulness. And wish yourself well and everyone in your life and all beings everywhere. May all see clearly. May all share their love well. May all know the highest happiness. And may all benefit from our coming here together. Thank you very much. Thanks, Jane. And come by next week. I'll be here with Kate, and have a good week.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really enjoyed and appreciated your attention.
I'll put an email on her and say, hey,